You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini. Educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with The Deal Farm. On today's Best Deal Ever episode, I've got Jefferson Lilly. Jefferson, how you doing?
I'm well, Ken. How are you?
Doing very good. Thanks so much for being on the show, especially considering you're on vacation right now. We really appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, that's quite all right. It's actually a slightly gray day here on the Jersey Shore where I am with my in-laws and extended family. So if I can't be soaking in the sun, then I'm more than happy to do a podcast.
Oh, I'm glad it worked out. So yeah. Jefferson is the co-founder of Park Street Partners. It's a company out of California, and they specialize in mobile home park investing, which is actually, it's something I've been looking forward to this interview because it's an area that I really don't know a whole lot about. I think in all the houses I've done, maybe one of them or two of them in the last so many years has been a mobile home, and it was something I didn't really hold on to. It wasn't necessarily in a park. So I'm actually really curious, Jefferson, to kind of get into the nuts and bolts of how this works. But before we get there, maybe you can just give us the quick rundown. How did you even get into mobile home park investing?
Okay, great question. So I've always been interested in investing, and I think I bought my first stock when I was about 17, and my father had to co-sign the trade ticket. I'm probably a little older than you are, Ken. This is back before things like E-Trade and Internet. You had to deal with an actual broker.
Right.
But I've just always been interested. I've always been a big fan of Warren Buffett and held a bit of the Warren Buffett, a bit of Berkshire Hathaway stock. So I've always I've liked value investing much better than sort of growth and momentum. So honestly, it's been almost 10 years ago now, I thought I would just diversify out of the stock market and buy some value real estate. I was thinking initially, like I think a lot of people do, of buying an apartment building and, you know, maybe getting one that was a little bit ugly, putting, you know, I would put on a new roof, some new kitchens. Well, I wouldn't be the guy to swing the hammer, but, you know, I'd hire folks to do that. I'd fix it up, make it better for the tenants, better for them, also raise my rents, better for me. You know, I don't mind working. But just as I started looking then at and researching multifamily, and that business is certainly 99% apartments, I came across mobile home parks, which are sort of the other 1%. And that was just doing some internet research. But came across mobile home parks and bought my first park. I guess I got interested in the space late 05 and then closed on my first property early 07. And we'll talk more about that in the interview. But that was it. It was just a little bit by plan and a little bit by luck that I came across this space and realized that it's really, I think, the most compelling niche of real estate out there, better than apartments or single-family houses or self-storage or most any other real estate niche.
That's interesting. So you were full-time in the tech industry, decided you wanted to invest in, like you said, like a value investment of some sort, found your way to mobile home park investing. And then at what point did you say, you know what, I want to quit this job and do this full-time and start Park Street Partners?
Yeah, so as compelling as mobile home parks are, yeah, at no point did I say, oh, this is so great, I'm giving up these lucrative Silicon Valley stock options and quitting and just going to go do this full-time. It wasn't quite that dramatic. Right. I bought the first park. I still had my day job working in sales, in high tech, selling wireless messaging solutions. You think about like an airline that would have sent out a flight delay alert by text message.
Mm-hmm.
And this was, again, before the iPhone and apps and all sorts of other ways to get an alert to fire up on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that last startup was not doing real well. That was my third over the course of about a decade. And the first couple had gotten bought with varying degrees of success. That last third startup, unfortunately, was not doing well. So again, I overlapped for about a year, and I could see that my first mobile home park was doing reasonably well. I was putting basically no time or money into it, and that last startup was not doing so well. So there's about a year overlap with my regular job, obviously also providing me an income. and I could really watch and see that the park was doing well, and I could see what additional things I could do if I started doing it full time. I could see the additional improvements I could make to roughly double the profitability of the park if I started going after it full time. So I did that. There was about a year overlap, and but I took the plunge, and it's taken on a life of its own. I started, you know, consulting to a high net worth family in San Francisco that owns a gorgeous property in Northern California, nearly $500 lot rents, palm trees, pool, jacuzzi, just wow. A gorgeous, super expensive park, the sort of thing that probably trades at about a 6 cap rate and has very little upside because it's already well run and full. So unfortunately, the sort of thing that I'll probably never own. bought that first park, and then a second park. Both of those are in the Oklahoma City area. And then ended up forming the Park Street Partners partnership almost 2 years ago. So I've been an owner now roughly 8 years, 8 and a half, something like that. So that was it. That was how I got into this space. I just kind of never looked back. Just transitioned, as I say, from mobile phones to mobile homes.
Nice. That's, so Park Street Partners is about 2 years old then at this point.
Yeah, it is. So I've got two properties on my own that I own 100%. I finance that with my own capital and, of course, help from some banks. And then as a partnership, we've bought... last year, 2014, we did four deals, deal by deal. We raised almost $2 million in equity capital to acquire four deals. And then this year, 2015, we've now grown up into a fund structure. So we had a little bit of a chicken and egg situation, you know, last year, basically thinking, should we, you know, first raise money in a fund and then go find deals, or should we first find deals and then go raise money? And we didn't have a track record as a partnership last year. So we found the deals first, and the money flowed, and the deals were oversubscribed, and, you know, we had to return capital at closing.
Wow. That's a good problem to have.
Good problem to have, yeah. So some of those folks, of course, now have rolled capital over into our fund. Our fund now has made its first acquisition about 6 weeks ago. That's a Wyoming deal. We'll talk more about that in the interview. Second deal that we've got teed up to close July 31st, here roughly another 3 weeks. That'll be Ohio. And we've got a couple other things under contract. So we expect in the fund by the end of this year, and we'll make it an annual fund, so we'll close this fund at the end of 2015 and open up a 2016 fund. But by the end of this year, I would expect that we would acquire probably another two or three, so that we might have four or five parks in the fund. That obviously gives my partner, Brad Johnson, and I a little more visibility into, you know, whether we need to be hunting, you know, two or three giant elephant deals, or whether maybe we need to be hunting, you know, two or three more modest size antelope deals, or whatever the analogy might be. Right. But it lets us kind of know and be certain that we can close on deals. And frankly, it gives our limited some diversification.
Sure.
Because we own properties so far in, Wyoming, Kansas, Oklahoma, Indiana. We're about to close on Ohio. We like the Midwest, so it's, you know, less likely that we're going to buy a sexy California property.
Right.
But we would if we could get one at the right price. But anyway, so having the fund structure, again, gives our limited some diversification across geographies.
Sure.
And gives my partner and I greater visibility into knowing what size and quantity of deals we need to be targeting for any given quarter or couple of quarters ahead of us.
So now the fund that you've put together, is that paying cash, or are you still using leverage?
Oh, we would pay all cash if we have to. But we, you know, prefer to use leverage. And so the Wyoming deal, we got middle of the road, traditional 75% loan to value, mortgage from a local bank. this was not, this was about a $1.8 million acquisition. It's a roughly 90 space mobile home park, over in the western part of Oklahoma, of Wyoming. So we put down 25% equity. That deal's very clean. There are no real deferred maintenance issues. We may have to do a bit of repair on some mobile homes that may come vacant. And we're happy to do that and obviously, you know, clean up the community, make it better for the residents. But fixing up mobile homes on a per home basis is roughly a $5,000 expense. And I think we're sort of budgeting that we may have 3 to 5 of those coming back before the end of the year.
Gotcha. But
that's not big dollars.
So there is, I mean, I guess that'd be a question for a lot of people. A question I would have too is there is financing out there for mobile home parks. I guess at the local level, if you find a good local bank to work with, but are there national banks that you've worked with before too to get this sort of financing?
Yeah, there are a few. If you're doing sort of $2 million and certainly $2.5 million and up acquisitions, actually Wells Fargo, based right in my backyard in San Francisco, wow. Wells Fargo has a very significant mobile home park lending group, and Citibank does a fair amount of it. And then Clayton Bank, and this is Jim Clayton's bank, formerly of Clayton Mobile Homes. Mm-hmm. He had sold his mobile home manufacturing business to Warren Buffett. I believe that was back in 2003, and walked away, I think, with something like $600 million. And he formed a bank. He bought a bank, ironically, that his mother had worked at as a teller back in the 1950s.
Wow.
renamed it Clayton Bank. They're out of Knoxville, Tennessee. And so they do all sorts of lending. I think they do, you know, automobiles, single family houses. They do a little bit of everything. But obviously, given Jim's experience with mobile home parks, they really focus on mobile home parks. So they actually wrote a nice mortgage on one of our two Tulsa, Oklahoma properties. Again, 75% loan to value. And they also wrote us an additional $500,000 line of credit to acquire individual mobile homes to infill that property. So Clayton Bank is probably the only bank lending nationally that will also help mobile home park owners buy individual mobile homes and infill their park with new or used homes.
Gotcha. Very interesting. I mean, who knew that Wells and Citibank and Clayton were all into the space?
Yep, indeed.
So, you know, most of our listeners are probably thinking, okay, I've seen mobile home parks before. They're ugly. They sort of have a stigma about them. You know, most people probably don't even think about investing in mobile home parks. But obviously, you've gravitated towards this space. Why did you gravitate towards mobile home parks as, let's say, opposed to apartments or single family homes?
Yeah, great question. So there are about 4 key reasons. So first off, mobile home parks really do have all the same benefits of, for instance, buying apartment buildings or single family houses. I think probably most of your listeners are familiar with apartments, and they would say, well, sure, you know, you can buy it with leverage. If you buy it right, you know, you're going to do really well. Plus, with an apartment building, you're going to get depreciation. And that obviously means a good chunk of your income is tax-free. And mobile home parks have all those same benefits, and frankly, maybe even a little greater. I know a lot of people think, oh, mobile home parks are just land. You can't depreciate land. Well, mobile home parks are principally land, you know, visually when you look at them, because you don't typically own the improvements. You don't typically own the mobile homes. There is always goodwill, and so when we make an acquisition, we look at what raw land costs are, and usually the raw land costs are per acre, you know, are about 10% of what we're paying, or perhaps 20%. So that means the remaining 80 to 90% of our purchase price gets ascribed either to improvements, and there are roads, water pipes, sewer pipes, sometimes, you know, a small well house or even clubhouse. So there are some improvements. But then we may also, frankly, be paying even above and beyond that, and that would be ascribed to goodwill, and goodwill is 15-year, quote-unquote, property. So between roads and pipes and goodwill, we're typically depreciating, I would say, 80, even 85% of our purchase price over probably 20 years. So that's much better than buying an apartment building and depreciating 75 or 80% over, what would that be, 27 and a half
right,
years or
right.
something?
Yep.
Okay, so mobile home parks, again, still have all the same benefit of apartment buildings, the leverage, you've got a diversified tenant base, it's got all that. But here's where mobile home parks get better. So we tend to buy parks that have all resident-owned homes. And the impact to my P&L there is that when all or most of my tenants own their own home, then they own all those proverbial leaky toilets and leaky roofs. And Ken, I don't have to maintain those. And frankly, they break less because now I've got a tenant base that shows pride of ownership.
Sure.
These folks own their own mobile homes. That makes a world of difference. So it's not that we're somehow unfairly transferring all these maintenance costs to tenants. The tenants take better care of anything that they own.
Absolutely.
So imagine for any of your listeners that have been in the apartment building business or single family house, think about what you spent on repair and maintenance. Just look at like your 2014 number and divide it out and parse it out into what amount you spent on the four walls of your house or apartment building versus what you spent on the land. You probably only mowed the land, maybe even the tenant did that, and maybe you had some sewer unstops. But I would bet if you really parse out your repair and maintenance on an apartment building or single family house, you're going to see that probably 60 to 80% of your repair and maintenance went to maintaining the four walls, the stuff above the land, not the actual land.
Sure. Well,
again, with mobile home parks, we buy just the land, so we have a much lower repair and maintenance budget. It's not that expensive to maintain the land. Again, it's principally mowing. Principally mowing and some sewer unstops. And then on one, you know, our large Tulsa deal, we did just resurface the streets. And that's sort of a once every 5 to 10 year expense. So your repair and maintenance costs are much lower than with apartment buildings. Another key benefit of these of mobile home parks is that they aren't building mobile home parks anymore. Pretty much every city and county over the last roughly 20 years has made it illegal or basically changed the zoning so that you cannot build mobile home parks anymore. I've seen cities, counties, like change multifamily zoning specifically to be multifamily apartments. So again, you can no longer build multifamily mobile home parks. Certainly not any place you'd want to, you know, maybe an hour outside of a town in the middle of nowhere, you could still build one. But obviously, wherever the jobs and the people are needing affordable housing, closer into just city centers, you can't build these anymore. So think about how profitable, say, apartment buildings would be if you knew that you owned, you know, one of 10 apartment buildings in whatever town, but there would never be another apartment building built. That makes really any business, be it real estate or any sort of an operating business, you know, if you were in the insurance business or widget manufacturing and it was illegal for anybody new to enter the space or increase capacity, because you can't expand a mobile home park either, that would make any business very interesting.
Well, absolutely.
So in the markets we're in, yeah, we haven't seen any new parks built. And then here's something interesting that happens. And nobody knows the exact number, but best guesstimates is that about 1% of all mobile home parks get plowed under every year and become, you know, a sexy housing development or condos or a shopping mall or what have you. So not only is competition fixed, it's actually shrinking about 1% a year. And I have seen two parks now near our seven over the last roughly 8 years that I've been in this business, I've seen two nearby parks close. And some of those tenants, not all, but some of those tenants have moved their mobile homes into my parks. So now I get a responsible tenant that owns their own house. Some of those folks I've helped with the cost of the move. But it's money very well spent. I get, sure, again, a responsible tenant owns their own house now infilling my park nearly for free. So anyway, supply is not just fixed. It's actually shrinking about 1% a year. You've got, you know, stable demand, just the same as apartment buildings. Demand grows about 1% a year, right along with, the broader population growth. So that's a very compelling industry dynamic, to have stable growing demand and stable shrinking supply.
Sure. And to clarify too, because I know somebody's going to say, well, I live in such and such county and it's still legal. I think the distinction is there probably are counties where it's legal to have a mobile home park, or maybe there's no zoning limitations. They're just not in areas that you would put a mobile home park because you're not near employment centers. I think
exactly. They would tend to be more out, much farther away from any city center. We like to buy mobile home parks within about 5 miles of a super Walmart. Walmart obviously does their demographic studies really well. They put their biggest, best super Walmarts where there is good population density and growth. So yes, if any of your listeners out there know of a place where a mobile home park can be built within 5 miles of a super Walmart, I want them to call me. I'll pay them a referral fee because that's very rare.
Yeah.
I will just put this little caveat on that. It is, for instance, still, what the game a lot of cities and counties will play is they'll say, okay, it's still legal to build one, but you know, you have to have like an acre of land around each mobile home. Now, most mobile home parks have about 10 mobile homes per acre. So, again, a lot of cities and counties will make it, it's not specifically against zoning, but they make it not economic with having to buy that much land to put, you know, a house on. And they'll require wide paved roads and fire hydrants and sidewalks.
Sure.
They just make it not economic. So the only thing it makes sense, if you're buying an acre of land and you can only put, or say 10 acres of land and you can only put 10 dwellings on it, those are going to be nice single-family houses, 2-3-car garage houses that get built when cities make it not economic. If they haven't made it outright illegal and against zoning, they'll just make it not economic to build a mobile home park.
Well, and to that point, you're probably buying for a lot less than it would cost to develop as new. I mean, all the infrastructure, the pavement's already in place. You're buying way below that replacement cost, I'm sure.
We've typically been 10 to 20% below replacement cost.
Mm-hmm.
And there is additional value. And this is often a lot of what gets ascribed to goodwill, because of course, sometimes the pavement and other things are depreciated, but there is real true goodwill, because you've got in a mobile home park, you know, you've got something very special. You've got a business that's, of course, you know, valuable to society. You're providing affordable housing. And again, you're buying into a business that is a government-regulated oligopoly. You're rarely a monopolist, but you're an oligopolist. You know, again, competition is fixed. There'll never be anyone new to compete with you. And that's just a very good business to be in. So, yeah, so there you go. One of the other final things I'll just close out on this train of thought on, as far as why mobile home parks are good investments. In general, the folks that are selling mobile home parks are mom and pop investors, as opposed to, you know, sophisticated investors.
Hmm.
We've seen mobile home parks being sold by people that actually still live in them, certainly live near them. But we looked at a park literally in Kentucky 2 years ago. Literally, the guy that owned it was in the back corner of the park. So all of his, you know, park residents were also his friends. He didn't want to raise rents too high on them. And he just wasn't a very good operator. He wasn't properly marketing the park or fixing up houses. Anyway, you see that less when you're buying an apartment building or self-storage or a small office or retail center. people that own those kinds of real estate niches tend to be more sophisticated investors. You don't find anybody living in an apartment building that, you know, their dad developed the apartment building after World War II or Korea. But you do see that to a much greater extent. It's not entirely black and white, but to a much greater extent, you see that with mobile home parks. So it's relatively easy to buy a park that's been not super well managed, buy it at, say, a 10 cap, mom and pop sellers tend not to drive price too high. And again, there's still meat on the bone because they haven't been properly marketing the property, mm-hmm. or rents are clearly below market. Everybody else is, you know, $300 and they're still at $225 a month for the lot rent. So it's relatively easy to buy something at a 10 cap and improve it, just through, you know, better marketing, a website, and or some rent increases, you know, and get that thing to a 12 or even 13 cap. Basically for free before you even start investing real money, say, in fixing up houses. Mm-hmm. So there's just nothing else like it. You know, I would say most of your listeners would be hard pressed to be buying apartment buildings at a 10 cap that can easily be improved to a 12 or 13. And again, they'd still have a less stable tenant base that does more damage than what we have in the mobile home park business. So anyway, a lot of compelling reasons this is really the best niche out there, better than any other niche that I've ever heard. And I've researched a bunch, again, self-storage, apartments, small retail strip centers. This is really the best real estate niche going.
No, it's definitely compelling. You definitely got my mind spinning. Well, the other thing is you don't hear a lot of people talking about it. You probably don't have a lot of competitors in the space either looking for these assets.
Yeah, this is the ultimate non-sexy business. So the big downside is, you know, when you go into a cocktail party or go have a Christmas party with your friends, you know, you might just have to talk generally about how you're in real estate. If you actually mention that you're in the mobile home park business, you're going to get a lot of strange looks.
I can imagine.
But again, if you think about it, you know, everybody's talking about doing single family fix and flip, or frankly talking about, you know, buying high tech stock and other sexy investments. I would argue any investment where people don't want to deploy capital into it is almost by definition a good business. Again, the fundamentals of this business are very strong. It's just not sexy. And so not a lot of investors are chasing it. So of course you can imagine what happens to prices. They're obviously high. We have relatively little difficulty buying things at a 9 and 10 cap that can be easily improved from there. This is not a business, that's terribly sexy, and there's just not a lot of either individual investors or even some of the large Wall Street hedge funds that would, you know, that gobbled up like 10,000 site-built houses back during the housing crash. There's just not been anything like that in this business. It is terminally unsexy, and just for that reason, emotionally, a lot of people don't want anything to do with it. And that means those of us that are in it can still buy at very favorable prices.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to that point, let's talk maybe about your best deal. And now, granted, you haven't done a lot of deals, but because each one of them is very large, is there one maybe that you've picked up in the last couple of years that stands out to you as maybe the best deal that you've done thus far?
Yeah, we think we've done a number of very good ones. But I'll talk about one. It was actually our first deal that we put together just over a year ago. It's called the Cherry Woods Mobile Home Park. It is in Ottawa, Kansas, and you can just check it out. The website is simply cherrywoods.net, N-E-T. This was a property, roughly 45 spaces. It was roughly a third empty. So there were somewhere around, I guess, 32 or 33 paying customers. The tenants all either own their own house or had actually taken a mortgage on the house from the previous seller. Mm-hmm. These were proper mortgages. This was not rent to own. So these people put down real money on their homes or owned them outright. So we got into the deal at a 10 cap. Ottawa, like a lot of Kansas, is a very stable economy. Unemployment was, I believe, like 5.3%. Average house prices, well over $100,000. So basically, we are the affordable housing choice in that town. This is basically a distant suburb of Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
So single-family houses are much more expensive. There are two other mobile home parks in that town. The other two are much rougher. Our park was built in 1998. And so this was actually unusual. Again, I said it's pretty much illegal to build these things, or has been for roughly 20 years. The builder of this property got it in kind of just under the wire. And he was a great operator, very diligent about the way he constructed the park. There's a huge tornado shelter, and then on top of it is a nice barbecue and picnic area. There's a kiddie playground next to it. I think he used Schedule 80 PVC in all the sewer lines. And then even the water is direct billed to the tenant, so by the utility company. So we own none of the utility infrastructure. So it's just, it's a quintessential parking lot. We only collect lot rent. We don't have to bother, again, with, say, getting a master metered water bill and then putting meters on each house and billing the tenants for their usage. There's none of that. It's very clean. We're right near, actually just walking distance, to a really excellent elementary school. It's the new elementary school built in that town. So we attract families. We have mostly three bedrooms and some four bedrooms. We attract families when they've got young kids that go to that elementary school. And the kids then obviously grow up. The parents tend to stay, even though the kids are now going off to the high school. So we have a, you know, we provide a very valuable service, housing, to folks, that have young kids. So that deal already is returning to our investors about 14% cash, and there's been over 10% equity return, on that. So our investors are getting more like a mid-20s return. And the park's not even full yet. We've gotten some of that one-third infilled, and the rest of it should get filled over roughly the next 12 months. So the returns are only going to increase over the next roughly year, year and a half.
Wow.
But anyway, that's probably our best deal. We got that one with seller carry. The seller actually took back paper locked in for 10 years at 5% fixed.
Wow. Jeez.
So, yeah, so there's no bank silliness to qualify. You know, we closed on that deal quickly. We just, of course, had to do a survey and get a phase one done. But as anybody who's done real estate knows, it's typically getting the appraisal and even just getting a bank initially interested that takes the most amount of time. So that deal with seller carry, below market seller carry, was a very quick, clean deal. I think we saw it like on a Wednesday and Thursday morning. It was an off-market listing just through a broker that we've got a relationship with. So this was not shopped out on LoopNet or anywhere. He just sent it to us like on a Wednesday, and Thursday morning we wrote a full price offer.
Well, that was going to be my next question is how did you source
this?
Happy
with it.
Well, absolutely.
It's most of this business, and it moves in waves, but right now and for the last several years, generally brokers have been the best source for mobile home parks. That said, you know, we do have a presence on the web. Pretty much every week we have somebody contact us with a park for sale, just because they, you know, they're obviously a seller, they've heard of us, they've heard a podcast that I've done, or they've seen our website. So we do get some deal flow that way, but probably brokers are the best. And then we've also done some mass mailings. We've mailed about 3,000 postcards with mixed results. We've had some interest. No deals have come from it, but as they say, all it takes is one. So we'll kind of see what those postcards bring maybe over the next 6 months.
Interesting. Jefferson, this has been really enlightening, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are thinking the same thing I am, that, wow, why am I not in mobile homes, the mobile home space? Because there's a lot of compelling reasons to be here. So for somebody that is interested in maybe working with you or investing in one of your funds, where should we direct them?
Yep. Sure. So our website is parkstreetpartners.com. Investments.net. And then our information about our fund, we do have a properly registered 506 Reg D fund for accredited investors. Just add backslash fund to that website. ParkStreetPartners.net/fund is where they can find that information. We have actually worked with a couple of folks directly. One guy that had about an $800,000 1031. Mm-hmm. And so he actually identified a property, but we put together the deal whereby we're now joint venturing on it. So for anybody with significant 1031 funds, or anybody that's, again, sort of found an off-market property, and even, again, if they're not an accredited investor, I think we can find a way to work with them. They'd just buy into the deal directly, mm-hmm. and then our fund with accredited investors would also, you know, share the deal with them. We wouldn't do that for somebody who's not accredited with just capital. But again, if somebody knows of an off-market deal or has a 1031, then we're more than happy to accommodate them. And then other folks that, again, are intrigued by the business, but maybe just say, like, whoa, you got to fix mobile homes and maybe buy them wholesale and truck them into the park. That's too many moving parts. Let me just invest. Then again, for them, we're more than happy to tell them more about our fund. And again, we're not making any guarantees, but I think it's pretty clear that we're going to generate returns into the 20-something percent a year for folks. And this industry's probably got, you know, below market volatility. We think a beta of about 0.65 or something. It's a fairly safe, stable business that's mm-hmm. yielding 20% net to passive investors, at least now.
Yeah.
Before everybody gets into business, it's still very good. So again, we'd love to have conversations with individual investors that might want to be in our fund.
This is awesome. Jefferson, thanks so much for being on the show. Folks, again, parkstreetpartners.net. If you're interested in the fund, it's the same website, parkstreetpartners.net/fund. Jefferson, thanks so much for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
Okay, Ken. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Hey, Deal Farm podcast listeners, this is Ken Corsini reminding you to check us out online at dealfarm.net. Feel free to download our free ebook, How to Invest in Real Estate. And do not forget, we still have our free t-shirt offer going. All you have to do to get a free Deal Farm podcast t-shirt is go into iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. Once you've done that, go to our website, email us and let us know that you've done it. Give us your address and t-shirt size, and the t-shirt will be in the mail immediately. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of The Deal Farm. Take care.